What do you think the greatest gift of the holidays is? Internet? I'd say internet. Yes, absolutely. It's of course, as easy as it's always been. You get an iMac 10 minutes out of the box, you're on the internet. But now, Apple gives you your own personal website. You can post your photographs for all your family to see all over the world, and your iMovies. And now you're the purveyor of, you're the generator of, you're the author of great stuff. Isn't it nicer to give than to receive?
Hello, and welcome to Telcast the Best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Airfan Elijah. Joining me today, he says there's nothing like 13, 14, maybe 15 ales to wash back that Thanksgiving dinner. Leander, Katie is here.
Hello, Airfan.
Also joining us, he looks so good, you're going to want to cover him with gravy and take a big old bite. Buster. Buster. Heine is here.
What up?
Oh, I got my gravy boat ready for you, my friend.
Oh, really?
A very happy Thanksgiving to all of our U.S. listeners. This is my favorite time of year. I'm going to throw down tomorrow. What about you guys?
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited.
Leander, you guys probably cook a ham or something, huh?
No. We have the full-on turkey meal.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. Good. But of course, all the anti-British jokes come out, you know, like on 4th of July as well.
Oh, really? Everyone talks about how the U.S. is better?
Do you guys celebrate it? Blah, blah, blah. You know.
Okay. Well, they don't. Why would they?
Right.
Right.
That's true.
No one celebrates it for the U.S. It's our holiday. That's pretty funny. Well, we actually have some stuff to talk about this week. We have to talk about net neutrality. I hate that we even have to bring this up. I really don't even want to talk about this, but we're at a point now where I feel like it needs to be brought up, and I'm going to ask you to take action. I know you don't want to hear that, but net neutrality is on the chopping block. It's the town square is packed with people. The guillotine is raised. The blade has been sharpened. And the FCC is the executioner, and it's walking net neutrality to the guillotine to lop off its head. And if we don't do something about it, it's going to be gone. And so we need to talk about that, and I'll try to be brief. I'll try to be brief. Also, we'll tell you how Tesla just out-appled Apple this week. You probably heard about the new car they released, but you may not have heard how they released it, which was pretty much a copy of the One More Thing, probably one of the best One More Things I've seen. We'll also talk about the HomePod. As you know, it's been delayed. We'll tell you when you can expect to get your hands on it. Also, Bloomberg put out an interesting piece on the history of the HomePod this week that actually gives some details into the HomePod I don't think that we've heard before. And it shows how HomePod is going to be different than all the other smart speakers that are currently on the market. So we'll touch on that as well. And we'll wrap up with some of our favorite Black Friday deals. And I have one in particular that I think is probably one of the best deals out there. It's something that I've talked about a little bit in past shows, but the price has just been lowered for a limited time, so I want to bring that up and let you guys know about that. Let's see here. Before we jump into all the Thanksgiving fun, let me go ahead and say thank you to LinkedIn Learning for supporting this episode. LinkedIn Learning now features every course from lynda.com, the leader in online learning with 20 years of experience. LinkedIn Learning is for problem solvers, for go-getters, for people who want to make moves in their career. Maybe you want to create infographics, improve your leadership skills, or redesign your website. Everything you need to achieve more is on LinkedIn Learning. Guys, LinkedIn Learning is Lynda reborn. And it's the first place that I go when I need to learn about the software that I'm using, or if I'm trying to learn a new application. Like, it's what I used to learn how to use Logic. It's what I used to learn how to use Final Cut Pro 10, because the experts that they have teaching these courses are extraordinarily knowledgeable on their topics. But more than that, their passion for their topics comes through in the courses, and it makes it easy to learn from them. And you'll be up and running in your favorite applications in no time, whether it's Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects, Final Cut Pro 10, Logic, you name it. They have a course for everything. And the courses are structured so you can learn from start to finish, or you can jump to a specific chapter and watch shorter bite-sized segments. You can learn at your own pace using the method you prefer. Plus, you can get transcripts for each video so you can watch, listen, or read along. Check it out. LinkedIn.com/cultcast. LinkedIn.com/cultcast. You can get a 30-day free trial to learn all you want. LinkedIn.com/cultcast. Okay, before we jump into the news here, can we talk about Thanksgiving a little bit? As many of you know, this is Tim Cook's favorite time of year. He puts on his Kiss the Cook apron, which everybody loves, always gets a big laugh. And he has his annual Thanksgiving holiday party, which all of the Apple executive team is required contractually to attend. And he makes a huge spread. All of Eddie Q's favorites are there. And before he jumps into the dinner, he thanks everyone for their hard work. And he, of course, goes into a keynote presentation of all the Apple gadgets and how they've done in the preceding year. And then everyone raises their glasses, and before they get started on the Thanksgiving dinner, he audibly, quietly, but audibly says, "Gobble gobble, y'all!" And everyone hollers and hoots. They love it. The whole crowd goes wild because they know that it's coming, and that sets the holiday season off. So a very happy, merry gobble gobble, y'all, to all of you from me and from Tim Cook. And I wanted to know from you guys, plate tactics. You're going up to the turkey. Tim Cook's got his kiss the cook apron on. What do you pile on your plate? In what order? What parts of the food do you take? What order do you stack it? Leander, what's your tactic?
Turkey breast.
Oh, you go for the breast?
Oh, yeah, totally. Savage. Absolutely, yeah. With some, you know, like a little bit of skin on it.
I would not have pegged you as a breast guy.
Yeah, you know, but then I avoid, like, all the rest of the stuff. Gravy, revolting.
You don't like gravy?
No, yeah, what liquid fat. Just repulsive.
Yeah, that's why it's good.
Mashed potatoes, not a big fan. I'll just have a little bit of that. I have some sweet potatoes.
Your British side is showing.
a little bit of...
This is all out of spite for our American holiday, isn't it?
I like the sausages. You know the sausages you cook sometimes with the turkey that go in the bottom of the pan?
Yeah. I've never seen a sausage be cooked with a turkey.
You don't put a sausage in the bottom of the pan?
No.
That's what they do. Well, they're probably a British thing.
Not only have I not seen that done, I've never even heard of that being done. Is that a British thing where they cook a turkey and they put some sausage? Of course they have to put some sausages in there.
Yeah. They put this British bangers, great British bangers in the bottom of the pan. And they cook in the turkey fat. They kind of deep fry.
Deep. So let me get this straight. You don't like the gravy because it's too fatty, but you do like the fatty sausage deep fried in the turkey's fat.
I know. There's no accounting for my weird taste. And I don't really like stuffing, to be honest, either. So, kind of picky. I have a bread roll.
So you just have a dry bread roll and some white meat.
I like the leftovers much better than I do the actual, you know, meal at the Thanksgiving meal. Uh-huh. Like, I like turkey sandwiches, and I put the weird British chutneys on them. You know, Branston pickle and piccalilli, which is like a mustard based chutney.
Oh, I've never tried those before.
Everyone hates them over here. Like, you know, just to try to force my wife and kids to eat it. Like,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, they don't like them. But
interesting plate strategy.
Right.
All right, yeah. Buster, what do you got for us?
I guess I, like Leander, like turkey as well, so I guess that's cool. I also like mashed potatoes. Like, can you not like mashed potatoes and stuff?
I don't know. That's very surprising.
Oh, yeah.
The WTF, for sure. Like, those three alone, you're fine. I mean,
if I could only eat one
part
of the meal, it would be the mashed potatoes and gravy. That's all.
Yeah,
I'd
probably.
Eat.
Yeah. That's usually like what you go for on seconds.
You make a little volcano, right, and fill it with gravy?
A little volcano.
Yeah.
Plus, I make one of those big science experiment projects where it's like a huge one that covers one plate.
Like something out of Third Encounters of the Closed.
Then I sit there like in What About Bob, and I just go, as I eat it. Sorry, Buster, I interrupted you.
Oh, you're cool. Like, that's those three, like, that's all you need, really.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what I do like? I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt either, but that's the veggies, fine. The Brussels sprouts.
Of course.
Sprouts. Who does Brussels sprouts on Thanksgiving?
Oh, we do.
Yeah, actually, I've had those for Thanksgiving before. Yeah, okay. Yeah. They're usually part of some other dish. They're not on their own. But, Leander, you said you and your son fight over them, so you guys...
Yeah. Well, he'll eat them as they come out the oven, yeah. So, and he ate almost a whole lot the last time.
Which is not weird at all.
He just loves vegetables. It's the strangest thing.
Is this the same guy who, when he jumped or when he was in the kitchen, his pants just fell off?
He's so skinny. Yes.
All he eats are vegetables, and his body's like, please, give me a slice of bacon or something.
Yeah.
Well, I always try to do it modestly, but of course that never works. Once the turkey comes out, I'm a dark meat man, man. I go after that dark meat. And like the wings and the legs, right? Those always have to sit on top of the pile because you don't want the skin to get soggy. And so you just pile the mashed potatoes on the bottom, and then there's like string bean or green bean casserole, I think it's called, which is almost like a mashed potato consistency because they mix all these other things in it. The cranberry sauce, and then the gravy, Leander, just goes over the entire plate, over everything. Cranberry sauce. You name it. If it's on my plate, it's getting gravy.
Covered in gravy.
And then the turkey goes on top, and I stay away from the white meats. I can't stand the white meat. It's usually so dry and chewy. Really? And I think the white meat is completely pointless. Like, I think if you cook a turkey, you might as well just carve it up, throw all the white meat away, and then just eat the good stuff.
You can make juicy white meat.
I've never had juicy white meat. Yeah.
I've had like totally dry dark meat too. I mean, it really just depends how you cook it. Yeah.
Oh, that's what I like about dark meat is like, even if you overcook it, which everyone always overcooks their turkey, is it's still juicy no matter what. And then the white meat is like falling apart. It's like in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, you know, he slices into a turkey and the whole thing just completely deflates. That's what the white meat is always like. It's like you like pour gravy on it and then you look down at your plate again and all the gravy's gone because it's just been soaked back into the white meat because it's so damn dry.
Well, we used to crucify the turkey every year. You know, it was either overcooked or undercooked. Like loads of times we'd be sitting around and I'd start carving it and, you know, the first cut and it's all pink inside and it's completely raw. So then it has to go back.
Because you undercooked it?
Yeah. You know, so we would mess it up every single year. And then I picked up a rotisserie, you know, like one of those romper peel rotisseries that you see on the late night ads, you know, set it and forget it.
That's right.
And it was like $5 or something. And, you know, it's been fantastic. So that every year we you know, we get out twice a year, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and cook a turkey in it. And
does it fit a whole turkey?
Well, it'll fit a 15 pounder, which is plenty big enough.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, my turkeys are not generally more than 13, 14 pounds, unless you're cooking for like, you know, a huge family or something.
Right. And this thing is, it's completely foolproof. Every single year it comes out perfect.
That's so funny because people clown on that device so bad because Ron Popeil is such a joker.
Yeah.
And he had that product that, that came in a can where if you had a bald spot, you could just spray it on your head. It's literally like spray paint for your scalp so that your bald spot would be the same color as your hair. But he's also the guy that releases like this really useful cooking apparatus that I've never heard anyone say anything negative about. Like that, what's it called again? The rotisserie, the Ronco rotisserie. I've never heard anyone say anything negative about it. Everyone raves about it.
Oh, they do? Really?
Yes. I've never heard a single bad word.
I don't know who uses one. Yeah, because everyone knows it from the ads, but I don't know anyone who actually has one or uses it.
I know a few people, but it only comes out once in a while. Then it just ends up going to Goodwill or something. All righty, well, let's move on. Let's talk about some tech news. Net neutrality is almost dead, ladies and gentlemen, but our pressure can save it. I as I said earlier, I can't believe that we're here. Net neutrality was done. It was over with, and the FCC classified ISPs as Title II, which basically meant that they were public utilities and had to behave in a certain way that was pro-consumer. And now here we are, the new head of the FCC. He basically wants to roll back all these regulations and let the ISPs do whatever they want. They're voting for this order called the Restoring Internet Freedom Order, which is aptly named because it restores freedom to the ISPs, not to you.
Right, to screw you.
And they're going to be voting on this order on December 14th. Well, the details of this plan were released today. And as you would have guessed, the plan completely removes all restrictions on throttling or prioritizing content and allows explicitly paid prioritization of content. So ISPs, remember back in the day, at least for those in the U.S., your Netflix would buffer constantly, and it's because Comcast, those six scumbags, were trying to double dip, and they were trying to force Netflix to pay them, Comcast, to access their customers. So you're paying Comcast to access the internet, and then Comcast would use you as a negotiation device to go to the content creators that you want to access and say, hey, if you want to access our customers, you need to pay us too, which is ridiculous because you're already paying Comcast. Well, Comcast, under the new rules, would be able to do that yet again. It ends the rules of net neutrality, and it allows ISPs to, you know, slow your traffic, block traffic, and play favorites amongst the websites that you see and pick and choose what kind of content that you should essentially be allowed to see. And if what I've said so far hasn't made you mad enough, Verizon has come out and said they are praising the new potential rules. Is that not what all you need to hear right there? Right. Verizon's for it.
It's telling, isn't it? The only people who are for this are for the big telcos, the big ISPs.
So. Yeah.
You know, this is not something that the consumers are demanding.
No. We were happy. The way the internet works now is the way it should work, I think, is the ISPs are just dumb pipes, and you pay for access, and they have to give you whatever traffic you want at the same speed as any other traffic. So if you think that this is important, if you don't want to see your bandwidth throttled, again, this is a sure thing. It's happening December 14th. Unless people raise their voices, we are losing net neutrality. It's cut and dry, as simple as that. If we don't raise our voices, it's going to be over. Well, you can do something. You can go to battleforthenet.com. And what the website allows you to do is it will connect you with your congressperson's office, and it will be via a phone call. And I know you're thinking, oh man, I don't want to make a phone call. I don't either. I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit on my ass and do nothing and have this go away.
Games, right?
But unfortunately, if we don't take action, that's not going to be what happens. And so it will even give you a script, and if you want, you can use a script to talk to your congressperson's office, or you can do what I'm going to do. I'm going to call, and I'm just going to bitch. I'm going to vent my anger, and I'm just going to let them know this is outrageous. I can't believe that you're letting this happen. I'm pissed off. There's no way that our government should be letting ISPs run their business however they like. And the reason I say that is because most ISPs are monopolies. Comcast is a monopoly in, I don't know, something like 95% in the markets in which it operates. And if it weren't a monopoly, I'd probably be more laissez-faire about the whole thing and just let the markets play out. But there are no markets. These ISPs have monopolies everywhere that they operate. So they can do whatever they want to you. And that's why I think we need to have government intervention, because there's no marketplace to provide them any sort of motivation.
This is the FCC's argument. They're saying that there's no marketplace because there are so many onerous rules. You know, these Title II rules, you know, restrict competition. And this is the whole rationale for doing it. But apparently, you know, if you look at, like, they're saying it'll empower smaller ISPs. But I saw some stuff online saying that small ISPs say that these rules aren't actually that onerous and they will not increase competition by doing away with them at all.
I thought the rules that were onerous were the ones that made it hard for ISPs to access the utility poles and make it hard to lay their line. And in fact, in Seattle, they loosened the regulations on accessing the utility rules. And then as soon as they did that, another company came in Seattle and laid fiber optic for the whole city, which is something they couldn't have done before. And I was just telling the guys before we started recording, I had a really expensive fiber optic plan. It was like $150 a month. It's for a gigabit plan. And just recently, because there's competition, because Comcast and CenturyLink, which are the two main companies here, are actually competing over my business, they dropped the price to $85. So my gigabit internet plan is now $85 a month. It's not throttled in any way, and there's no caps. It's like the perfect internet plan. I couldn't believe it. And I'm lucky to live in a place that has lax utility access rules. So the rules that need to change, in my opinion, are not the ones that have to do with Title II. They're the ones that have to do with municipalities preventing ISPs from accessing the utility poles and the equipment that they need to access in order to bring more competition into the area. Anyway, we've talked about this long enough. Battleforthenet.com. Take action, won't you? Because if you don't, we're all going to be screwed. And I'm going to have to pay Comcast like a fee to release a podcast every week. It's going to get crazy. I mean, it's going to get really crazy eventually. Let's talk about how Tesla out-appled Apple this week. I'm including a link in the show notes that you guys have to watch. Did you guys watch any parts of the Tesla event where they released the new semi-truck and then magically at the end they did one more thing and released the Roadster?
Yeah. Yeah.
People were losing their minds, Leanne.
Woo!
They were in total Eros. Like, I've listened to the video. I've queued it up to the portion where the Roadster gets released. It's in the show notes. Click on the link. These guys are in absolute erotica. They are losing their minds. They're hollering. They're moaning. They can't believe what they're seeing. And it was the classic one more thing moment where they were revealing the semi-truck. And the semi-truck, A, is one of the most beautiful vehicles I've ever seen. And it's a semi-truck, right? Isn't that gorgeous?
It does look good.
It looks like something out of Tron. And at the end, they pull the semi-truck up and they open the trailer. And everyone's like, oh, what's going on? What's Elon doing? And then out of the back comes this insane roadster that goes 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. And that's when everyone lost their minds. And it was one of those quintessential Apple moments that we don't really get anymore, Leander.
Right. Yeah.
We don't get those in Apple Land
anymore. It's the only other company, I think, in the entire tech space that's doing, you know, the big sexy reveal. And like the amount of press coverage they got from it was insane.
Insane.
And it was totally out of Steve Jobs' playbook. Like you said, it's a surprise, right? No one knew this thing was coming. And then it totally blows the doors off of, you know, anything else that's on the market. And it kind of maybe overshadowed the danger, I think, was that it overshadowed the truck a little bit. But I don't know.
I think so, definitely. Because, I mean, people are excited about... The truck is cool. It's like, oh, I'm glad that our economy is going to have this option. Whereas the Roadster... I saw YouTuber after YouTuber say it, they're putting down a deposit to buy this $200,000 Roadster.
Well, the early deposit is $250,000, isn't it? For quote unquote founders.
Oh, for the founders edition.
Right.
Yeah.
There were people lining. Did you see that line? They were lining up and they were putting down a $5,000 deposit with the rest the other $245,000 due.
These guys in the video were like, "Oh my god! Yeah, oh my god! Thank you, Elon! Thank you!" It was like Jesus had come down from the clouds. I mean, they were having like a spiritual moment. It was unbelievable how insane these guys were going.
Well, it is insane because, you know, have you been reading about the Model 3 problems? You know, I mean, he promised that they would be rolling off, I think, several thousand models a month now, and it's in the hundreds. Mm-hmm. You know, they cannot ramp up production on the Model 3. And then there was some cynics were saying that, they managed to raise $250 million from this Roadster, which they're going to be pouring into the actual Model 3 production to try to get that on track, before they try to get the Roadster on the market. Because, basically what they're doing is they're crowdfunding. You know, this is these are some of the biggest, crowdfunding campaigns going on right now. And Tesla's the only major car manufacturer that's doing crowdfunding basically to get its, production up online. This is the cynics' take on it anyway. Because they can't get the Model 3. I mean, they're trying to get the Model 3, I think, up to 500,000 units in the next year, which is kind of insane. You know, they're going from nothing, from being a very small boutique, small scale car manufacturer to, something that's rivaling the bigger companies, the much bigger car companies, with gigantic plants and years and years of experience. And I think it's, sort of proving how difficult it is to do this. Elon calls it quote unquote production hell. Mm-hmm. They're in production hell, but it's fantastically complicated. You know, there are so many suppliers they've got to juggle. They've got the bottleneck, I think, is in the battery plant they have up in Nevada, but they had problems with the body panels. You know, they can't get the body panels to be made in enough quantity. Yeah, mm-hmm. in quantities they need. And if you look at his projections were absolutely mad. You know, no one has ever done this before, I think, in the history of car manufacturing, be able to go from a few hundred to a few thousand to tens of thousands of vehicles a week, which is what they need to do. They already sold 500,000 Model 3s.
I wonder how long those people are going to be waiting.
Well, they were supposed to be getting them, I think, middle of this next year, right? 2018.
Mm-hmm.
They were promised, but I think it's going to get pushed back until the end of 2018, maybe into 2019.
I wouldn't be surprised if it were 2019 or even later at this point.
Yeah, right. But people are very forgiving, it's funny, they're very, very forgiving the customers. Oh, yeah. I think half of them kind of know this and they're like, okay, what the heck, it doesn't really matter. I'll wait anyway. Because they do get them in the end, look at the Model S. You know, that had a whole bunch of production problems as well at the beginning, but now they're rolling off the lines. But it's much smaller production run, though. They're only selling tens of thousands of those. I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, but, it's not, they're nowhere near. I think GM sells 50,000 vehicles a month, I think, or something mm-hmm. crazy, which, mm-hmm. to build 50,000 vehicles a month is a massive, massive operation. And Tesla, I think, is doing 5,000 vehicles a month. You know, it's 10 times the size. It's a tenth of the size.
In a lot of ways, Tesla is the new Apple. And there's that mania that people have about it, that extreme loyalty to the brand, that insane excitement whenever a new product comes out.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they're kind of where Apple was in probably the early 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
They're still having trouble with production.
But Apple's delivering on a massive scale. delivering its products. Yeah, it is interesting because it's a huge change in the it's going electric and all the smarts that are involved in the car. You know, it's a paradigm change, and they're all sort of playing catch up. I think they're all kind of terrified that Tesla's going to be hugely successful and take. You know, the Model 3 is really is the most important product they've ever done because it's an affordable mass market electric car that actually has decent range and a whole bunch of self-driving smarts. Like, doesn't it do level 4? Or it's going to do, like, they say it's capable of doing level 4, autonomous
driving.
At
some point, yeah.
Right.
I don't think any car is at level 4 yet.
No, but and they're gathering all the data. All the vehicles on the road right now are getting all the are gathering all this data for their machine learning or algorithms. So I think that the auto industry is terrified of someone like Tesla because they're afraid that Tesla's going to do an Apple on that. They're the cell phone manufacturers, like the Nokias of the world.
Yeah.
And then someone like Tesla and Uber and Lyft, if they have fleets of autonomous drive cars, that's it. That's the end of the auto industry. Did you see that? There was a really fascinating article by Bob Lutz, who was the GM's design chief for the last, 20, 30 years. He's Mr. Car, right? And he said that the end of the car, America's... the era of the automobile is over. That's it. It's done. It's drawing to a close. It's a fascinating idea because I think it's definitely true. It's like the way that cell phones, the iPhone, revolutionized cell phones and handheld mobile computing. The same thing is going to happen with cars in the next 5-10 years. And it's going to be fascinating to see.
I mean, there will always be people that want to drive the car themselves, and I kind of wonder.
I don't know what about that.
I
think it's going to be restricted to tracks.
You think so?
What about off-roading and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Like that's dirt a good roads. Point. I don't know. Like there's still a lot of situations where I feel like you would want manual control.
Definitely. If you're going off-roading or you're going up like a dirt road on a mountain, I'm not letting autopilot do that for me.
Right, but look at the number of, the miles driven. Most people the car is like a commute, right? And running errands and stuff like that. There are very few, I don't drive a car for pleasure really ever. When I go cycling around here, you can see all these there's a bunch of there's a bunch of performance cars, they go racing around the back roads around here, and but those guys are few and far between. They're just a fraction. So, I think most people would happily give up driving, to be honest. If it was if autonomous cars were as easy as I think they're going to be instantaneous. You'll just call one up, it'll be like Lyft. You get in, there's the car drives itself, you get out, and that's it. You don't think about parking, you don't think about maintenance, insurance, nothing like that. It'll just disappear. Well, I would I might be somewhat atypical, but for a city dweller, I think it's crazy to have a car in the city. I just do not need it, especially if there was access to that kind of on-demand transportation. I would take the bus, but the bus is like a huge horrible nightmare.
The bus is terrible. I mean, it's a waiting game. I feel bad for people to have to take the bus on a regular basis because it's so slow. You go to the bus stop, then wait, and the bus makes 100 stops between yours and the place you're trying to go.
Right.
It's just not feasible time-wise if you're trying to actually get anywhere and do anything. It takes too long.
Right.
I read a point online about the Model 3 and the interior and how it's perfectly designed for vehicle sharing because there's just not really anything in the vehicle for people to touch or mess with. And that's why maybe one of the reasons why the interior is so simplistic is because it's built for people just to kind of get into your car and then be driven around and not have anything to play with, which I thought was an interesting point. I think it would be incredible to have a car that drove itself. I do wonder how close we are to that level 4 technology where a car really can just be totally autonomous and doesn't need your interaction at all, because it doesn't feel like we're that close to that yet. It feels like the cars that they have out now still do require some level of attention and are good at driving themselves maybe some of the time or even most of the time, but they're not at a place where they can handle all the driving themselves yet. And it's hard for me to imagine that being a place we arrive at anytime soon.
Well, there's a few tests, aren't there? In fact, buses, isn't Uber doing tests in Phoenix very, very soon?
Uber's doing something out here. Google's Waymo, is that what it is?
Right.
They're doing some type of self-driving service. And I know for the first 3 months, they'll have a driver behind the wheel, but then eventually they're planning to not have a driver behind the wheel at all for the trip. So, Phoenix is a really good place for it because all the roads are straight and the weather's good most of the time. So,
and it's flat, completely flat.
Yeah,
and the worst thing you might plow into is a cactus or something. There's literally nothing outside Phoenix. It's like a little death desert. There's just bones, skeletons, and cactuses. That's it.
Well, I know about that. If you drive around, it's like, you know, big four-lane highways everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And tons of traffic. It's traffic. But then they're doing. I think there's driverless tests right now in San Jose in a senior living, town. Mm-hmm. There's like a small town. But I think they're saying the technology's there. You know, a lot of the car companies saying it's already there. It's a question of legislation and insurance. You know, risk. Who's going to pick up the tab if the robot, you know, causes a horrible accident?
Yeah, it would be the car manufacturer, I guess, right?
Well, I think, you know, this is what they're trying to decide, you know.
Wouldn't be the driver if you're paying for a car that's autonomous. Why would you even need to be insured anymore at that point? Your car would have to be insured.
Yeah, right. But then, you know, who would be liable for that? And I think this is what they're kind of worried about. They want to get that sorted out legislatively. But, you know, this brings up a good question. If Apple's working on a self-driving car, you know, would you want to own one? Would you actually pay that Apple premium for, like, super fancy Apple self-driving car? Or would it make more sense, you know? Because, will people own these vehicles anymore?
Do you mean regular vehicles?
Well, a car. Would you own it, you know, if transportation was on demand?
Yeah.
And, you know, if it was like, you know, Uber on steroids, where you could just, you know, you called up and instantly it would be there. It would take you where you wanted to go. You get out and then, you know, you get another vehicle on the way back. You know, would it make any sense to actually own a vehicle anymore, you know, self-driving or not?
I think I still would. I kind of like owning a car. And it depends on instantaneous you're talking. I mean, you say instantly, but I'm guessing it's going to be more like hailing an Uber or a taxi where you're going to be waiting 10, 15 minutes for the car to show up.
Right. And of course, here in San Francisco, it's very different to, like, you know, about somewhere in the sticks, you know, where if you live in the countryside or a suburb, you know, you'd have to wait a lot longer. And then, you know, also, like you said, you know, do you want to share it with someone else? Do you want to get into a car and someone's puked up on the back seat?
Oh, it just stinks like urine because, right. I mean, it just went.
And the robot has no idea that it's there, you know, because it's a robot.
The robot doesn't care if there's a giant turd in the back seat.
Right. And plus, you want to leave your stuff in it, right, don't you? You know, you're like, you probably want to leave things in the car, stuff that you want to get access to.
That's another interesting point, too. If you had a self-driving car, people are going to be puking in it. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of stuff. People are going to be having sex in it, for sure. There's going to be all sorts of weird stuff going on in those cars. Do you want your Model 3 subjected to the sexual affectations of some couple that gets their jollies by doing it in an automated car? I don't know. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that happens that I can imagine you wouldn't want to expose your own car to.
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, places like cities like San Francisco would be radically transformed, you know, because at the moment the entire city is given over to the car, right? Every single street is a big parking lot. There's cars everywhere. There's not one single street that, you know, is sort of car free. You know, like it was when my kids were young, you know, they play in the street and we couldn't play soccer because there's always a car coming through, really. And it would be lovely to see us. Like if you look at Europe, I was looking up some pictures of London it was, you know, I think Paris especially and some of the big European cities are really, really radically transforming. You know, they're pedestrianizing like crazy. And it's strange to see cities return to that. You know, it's like a like they were in the pre-car era where you could walk anywhere, you know, and cars and sort of, you know, they're restricted to very odd, you know, like early in the morning to do deliveries and stuff like that. And it's radically transforming. You know, the city would be a really, really different place. Really, really, really radically different and much, much nicer. You know, like, it'd be much more beautiful if you could put trees like in the middle of the roads and stuff like that because you wouldn't need the roads anymore and all these roads would turn into parkways. You know, it'd be quite lovely.
Especially San Francisco where it's already like very pedestrian friendly.
Right.
I think of something like that in Phoenix and like the car dominates the entire town's identity because you just have huge highways, everything spread out. You need a car. And huge roads, but if you didn't have it, it would be completely different too.
Yeah, but you could kind of imagine, couldn't you? Like, you know, if you know, Phoenix would be, because it's lovely, isn't it? It's beautiful. The weather's beautiful.
Yeah.
So either way, I think I'd want to own my own car, but it's an interesting thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I mean,
totally,
so much change happening in the auto space, and I just seeing that video, which again, it's in the show notes if you want to check it out. Seeing those guys lose their minds, and just start screaming in Eros. I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, this is definitely reminiscent of when Steve Jobs used to do the one more thing on stage. Everyone used to lose their minds. Except this is a whole new level. This mania is something that I don't think I've ever seen before for a company. It's just crazy. So go check out the video. Let's talk about HomePod. So it got delayed, Buster, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I was looking forward to buying one of these.
Yeah, I thought they would be out by now, but they're not going to be out this year
because they were going to be released this month and we hadn't really heard anything about them at all since they last talked about HomePod. And let's see, when are we expecting them now, Buster?
Sometime next year. Apple hasn't even really said, just early 2018.
Okay, so sometime in 2018 in the US, the UK, and Australia in early 18. So probably, I'm going to guess, January, February, March. I think we're looking at March. Because when they say early 2018, I'm sure they mean the first quarter.
Yeah.
And the first quarter ends in March, so March 31st, maybe.
Yeah, and it's not like there's any rush for them to get it out if they can't get it out for the holidays. So might as well just take their time with it a little
bit. Yeah, exactly. I don't even mind that they're doing this, quite honestly. The AirPods were delayed, too, if y'all remember. And look how much of a fantastic product that turned out to be. So I would much rather Apple take the time they need to fine-tune the product than release something that doesn't work very well. So I'm perfectly happy waiting. But that leads to this Bloomberg story. So I linked to this in the show notes if you hadn't checked it out. It's pretty interesting. It is a history of the HomePod. And there were a few things I was surprised about in the story. First of all, the HomePod has been in development since 2012. 5 years they've been working on this thing. And it's not like the Echo at all. That was one of the revelations I took away from this story is I think a lot of people think of the HomePod as a Amazon Echo competitor, but it's not. It was built as a music accessory, and it's supposed to be a musical speaker first, and then it also has the voice stuff built in, but that's not the main focus of the device, which actually makes me like it more. So the engineers and the designers who started on the HomePod wanted to build a really great speaker that sounded better than the ones sold by the likes of Bose, JBL, and Harman Kardon. The prototypes have been all over the place. The project has actually been started and canceled numerous times, and the prototypes range from a flat panel with a mesh screen to one measuring 3 feet tall with dozens of speakers inside, and the executives were trying to figure out what the hell to even do with this thing. In 2014, the HomePod project went from being something that was just prototyping and something that was an unofficial project, a hobby, if you will, to an official Apple endeavor. Well, that same year, that's when Apple released their Echo. And according to the report, it completely blindsided engineers. In fact, they were so shocked by it, they were joking, I'm sure half joking, that there must be a mole amongst them and somebody must have leaked what they were doing, because all of a sudden here comes Amazon and they release something that they were actually working on for years. Well, they got their hands on the Echo, they disassembled it, and they realized, well, this doesn't actually really sound great, and it's more of a smart assistant than with a built-in speaker than a dedicated music speaker. And so they decided to soldier on and continue building the HomePod. And the team that was building the HomePod even went as far as interfacing with the Siri team and telling them, look, the HomePod is about music and high-quality audio, and the voice stuff is going to be secondary. Which, for me, again, is exciting because the Echo sounds, I think, pretty good, but I think it was Engadget, when they were comparing the Echo to the HomePod, said if the HomePod is like listening to a CD, the Echo is like listening to AM radio. They said the difference in fidelity was that drastic. So for me, I'm really excited to hear what it sounds like, because it sounds like the perfect combination of a nice speaker and technology. But there are also some impacts to not having as much of the smarts built in. So HomePod is not going to support third-party skills or apps like the Echo does, which to me is not a huge deal, because every Friday I get an email telling me what skills the Echo has now, and they're all things I never use. I never use any of that crap. All I ever use is the Spotify Connect functionality, and then every once in a while I ask my Echo what the weather is or what time it is. That's it. Leander, do you find that you're using Echo for more than those functions, or is that pretty much it?
No, that's pretty much it, because you know, I've been kind of lazy really in learning how to use it. So timers, music,
right? Weather. Really basic functions.
Yeah, although you know, like we've had a show, you know, the Echo show, the one with the screen in the kitchen, and I'd been, you know, every time I look at it, I always feel guilty, because it's just sort of, you know, it's not they're really doing anything, because its capabilities, you know.
Right.
Do you know how many skills there are now? I was really surprised.
I don't know, 3,000.
Oh guessing. My god, 20,000.
Really?
Yeah, I just looked it up the other day. 20,000 skills or more.
And none of them are useful.
No.
I'm serious. None of them are useful. I mean, I've looked at some of the skills in the past, and it's stuff that just seems kind of quirky and not at all useful to your everyday life. And as you mentioned, there is an educational barrier there where you don't even know what the device does. It just sits there. staring at you, listening to you, but you don't really know what you can do with it.
Right. Well, the show, you know, keeps on scrolling all these different things, suggestions that you can ask it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them are sort of kind of, you know, they're not very good suggestions, I don't think. You know, they're sort of mainstream stuff. You know, ask it about the news. Ask it about, you know, who just won American Idol or whatever, you know. Kind of stuff that I don't really find that useful or that compelling. You know, flash news alerts and stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's definitely a big education problem there.
It's packed with fart apps, so to speak.
Right.
A bunch of apps that are just not that useful to your everyday life. And so they call all these things skills. But in reality, they're not skills that you would actually ever want to have.
Right. It's funny though, you know, like we were trying to do some sums the other night, and I was like, oh no, you know, and I was going to dig out my calculator, and then I just sort of shouted it out and it gave me the right answer. That was kind of handy. Every now and again, you know, like a flash of inspiration will occur to you, like something it can do that you didn't know it could do.
I do find asking it questions about people, places, and things to be useful, and that's something that I think I use it for the most often. Setting timers, definitely. And then asking what the weather is going to be like. That's probably my number one feature that I use. Well, besides Spotify Connect, is the number one feature that I use. I want to know is it going to rain tomorrow? How much is it going to rain? Is there a window of time tomorrow where it's not going to rain tomorrow in Seattle? Well, developers won't be able to write apps for the HomePod off the bat anyway. They have to create tweaked versions of their iPhone app if they want to have functionality with the HomePod. And Apple has limited the kinds of apps for HomePod to messaging, to-do lists, and notes. And so the HomePod sounds like an incredible device, and I think I definitely want one. The only thing that's going to turn me off, and hearing that it has limited app support, this concerns me a little bit, is will it have the ability to connect with Spotify? If it doesn't have Spotify Connect, which I could see Apple not including because they want you to use Apple Music, which I don't use Apple Music, I probably won't buy one because that means I can't use it for music. And that would be a major bummer. And I think it would be a huge oversight on Apple's part to not build it in right from the get-go. The HomePod needs to be compatible with all the music apps and not just with Apple Music, because I'm going to guess neither of you guys are using Apple Music. You're probably both using Spotify. Am I right?
Yep.
Boom! Leander, what are you using for music?
Well, I use music on my phone, but I use Spotify on Alexa.
I mean, what is it about Spotify? I don't know exactly what it is I like about Spotify more than Apple Music, but I love Spotify. I pay for it. And actually, now I'm sharing it with some of my friends. We bought like a family plan. And so it's even cheaper now. I'm paying like $4 a month for my plan. And it's outstanding. I love Spotify. And I can't see myself moving from it. And if they don't support it... Man, I'm gonna be so disappointed. I'll probably buy it, try it for 2 weeks, and then return it if it doesn't have Spotify support. But so there's that. So we won't be getting the HomePod until early next year, and I'm looking forward to testing it out when it finally comes out. Okay, so before we move into our Black Friday discussion and a very, very, extremely enticing Black Friday offer I'm gonna tell you guys about, let me go ahead and say thank you to Orbi for supporting this episode. Wi-Fi is something you don't really want to think about until it's not working or not working properly or not fast enough. Your video is buffering. You have Wi-Fi dead zones. You roam around the house. Your phone won't connect. You got low signal. You got too many devices connecting. It's slowing everything down. And with the holidays here, there are probably going to be people at your house. There are going to be more people connecting their devices. They're all going to be fighting for your Wi-Fi, your precious Wi-Fi, and you're trying to escape them, right? You don't want to see your family, so you're trying to escape into the rooms and watch YouTube, and you can't. Because your uncle is streaming something and your whole network is slowed down. When's the last time you upgraded the Wi-Fi at your home? Well, Netgear Orbi to the rescue for you, my friends. The Orbi is a mesh router system. And we've talked about mesh systems before. They're the future of routers. And the Orbi Wi-Fi system from Netgear is, if not the fastest, amongst the fastest that are out there. And they continually get the best reviews that I've seen online. It's simple to set up. It has strong, fast Wi-Fi in every corner of your house. It sets up in minutes, and you'll be enjoying faster, more reliable Wi-Fi anywhere in your home. And you'll have these little Orbis placed throughout your house. And so they connect with each other. And then because the Orbi has a third channel that they use to communicate with each other, unlike other mesh routing systems, they don't get slowed down by the traffic talking to one another because they have a dedicated communication channel. I know, Lander, you've been testing these out for months now, right?
Right.
And you've had nothing but good things to say about them.
Right. Well, Orb is the one that I bought for myself from my home after testing out some of the other mesh networking products. And the reason I did it was for exactly that. It has that dedicated back channel for communicating between the different satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have like a three satellite system in the house. There's the main one, and then there's a satellite at the front of the house and a satellite at the back of the house. And, you know, it completely covers the entire house. And in fact, I actually had a fourth satellite, and I had a couple of initial problems with it. And I called up Netgear, and they said, well, that's the problem probably is that you have too many satellites, you know, like
too much power.
Yeah, causing interference with itself. So and it was true, but when I unplugged it, it vastly improved the fourth one. So now I've got a spare satellite that I don't use because, you know, it actually was sort of overkill. They've got, you know, they're pretty, you know, they have a really big range, really, really powerful, very, very fast,
mm-hmm.
completely set it and forget it. Like, I never, you know, you don't have to tweak it, you don't have to restart it. It has been, you know, like the best, by far the best, you know, Wi-Fi system I've ever had. And I still have my old Time Machine. You know, I just turned off Wi-Fi on the Time Machine and plugged it into the back of the Orbi. And so now it's a, you know, it's, I can still back up using Time Capsule, you know, but it just, I don't use it for Wi-Fi any longer.
If you have an Apple router, you really need to upgrade. I'm serious. I mean, I love Apple routers, but they're not really supporting them anymore. And they are not pushing the technology any longer. And it's just not as fast as you could have in your home, especially if you have a multi-level home, because you can have an Orbi on one level and then an Orbi on another level, and they communicate with each other. And you'll be shocked, quite honestly, at how much faster your Wi-Fi will be if you have a mesh routing system like the Orbi. And again, this is, if not the fastest, one of the fastest systems that are out there. So if you want to check it out, go read the informational page at netgear.com/Orbi. That's O-R-B-I, netgear.com/Orbi. And then go read reviews online. That's what I would suggest, because it gets fantastic reviews. People love this routing system. And Netgear continues to put out great products, and they're really polished. I mean, extraordinarily polished. We've talked about the Arlo products in the past. They keep putting out great networking products. So netgear.com/Orbi. Okay, let's see here. Oh, before we talk about Black Friday deals, so along the same lines, I've been thinking about buying a TV. And I've been looking at the best deals that are out there, and I've been trying to decide whether or not I'm going to get an OLED TV or a really top-of-the-line LCD TV, right? Or an LED TV, I should say. And one of the things I realized is most of these TVs now, the smart TVs, have really excellent navigation systems built in, menu systems built in. Most of them have Netflix built in, Plex built in, all the apps you could want. Many of them have Google Cast built in, so you could stream from a browser right to your TV. And it got me thinking, is there any point for the Apple TV anymore? Really, seriously, what's the point of the Apple TV? I mean, the only thing you would really need it for if you had a new TV would be to stream your iCloud photo library. That's literally it.
It's got other uses.
Like what?
AirPlay, iTunes downloads, apps. Yeah, that's about it.
But that's a compelling list in itself.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the apps. The apps that are like the skills on the Amazon Alexa. They're, the apps are shite. None of them are any good.
No. Of course not. You know, like you've got all the main TV, the networks. You've got Netflix. The one big missing one is Amazon Prime.
Right.
But that's coming soon. And as soon as they fill that gap, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of apps that would be missing, I don't think. I mean, the only stuff that you probably want to, you know, like I was looking at some of the Android TVs because, you know, you might want to put, Kodi, you know, like I kind of became interested in Kodi for its piracy, you know, capabilities.
Oh, give up on Kodi. You got to use Plex. Plex is way better than Kodi.
Well, you know, you can get in Kodi, you can get all that kind of. Well, Plex is for your own library, isn't it? And Kodi is for the stuff that you don't own.
Oh, wink, wink. I see what you're saying, Gov.
I only say this because my brother bought a dodgy one from some friends who imported it from Ireland, and it's super popular over there because you know it's used to power all the sports. But they also use it. He uses it to watch UK TV, like you know, using iPlayer and the channel and the UK TV apps, which you can't get here, and you can use them on your computer or your iPhone if you have a VPN that makes it look like you're in the UK. But you can't use it with the Apple TV because unless you put a VPN on your router. But the Apple TV doesn't support VPNs, which is actually, you know, for me, that was the only apps that really were missing with those UK TV apps. But, I think Buster's right. I don't think there's many apps that are missing, really.
But that's my point, is a lot of the apps that you just talked about, all the major streaming apps, those are all in smart TVs now. They're built in. And at least for the TVs that I was looking at. So one of the TVs I'm thinking about buying is an LG OLED TV. It's the B7A. It's their least expensive premium OLED TV. And I was looking through the menu system. They use the old Palm card system, and they have this remote that is like a Wii remote. And it's motion controlled, you know, so you can point to stuff on the screen. It's really slick. And I was just thinking, man, why would you spend an extra $180 on an Apple TV, the 4K, to have most of these apps on a TV that already has most of these apps built in? It just seems like it would be a tough sell to me. And the only thing that I could think of is the Apple iCloud photo library. I mean, you can't stream your photos to your TV unless you have an Apple TV.
AirPlay, you know, AirPlay is like one thing I use quite a lot.
But a lot of these TVs have Google Cast built in, and I would argue Google Cast is even better than AirPlay in many respects.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, with YouTube, with AirPlay, you have to have your browser open, and you have to be actively streaming whatever's on your browser to the TV. And if you close your computer or if you navigate away from the page, the streaming stops. With Google Cast, which is built into many of these TVs, well, you have to be using Chrome. That sucks because Safari doesn't support it. But you can build up a queue in YouTube. And you could say, play this video, and then play this other video next, and then build up a queue. And then you can close your computer, and the TV will continue playing all of that content because it's pulling it directly from YouTube instead of streaming it through your laptop. And you can stream music with Google Play as well. And a lot of them have Spotify Connect built in, so you can stream Spotify from your TV. So there's just a lot of redundant services built into these TVs that make me think, oh, yeah, I mean, it makes it harder to recommend an Apple TV.
There definitely is a lot of overlap for sure.
Yeah, and I would love to see, and this leads me to my point, my very long trail to my point. I would like to see Apple start building their technology into TVs like Google's doing. I mean, in a way, it seems like a bad move to only sell Apple TV as hardware. They should have it be like CarPlay, where they approach TV manufacturers and say, hey, look, don't put Android TV on your TV, Sony. Why not use the Apple system, right? Wouldn't that be way better?
It definitely makes sense. I wonder why they're not doing that. Well, I wonder whether Sony would be interested in doing it. You know, do they want to really give up, all the software to Apple or to Android?
Well, right now their premium TVs run Android. They're Android TVs.
But I'll bet they have all the advantages, like, you know, of an Android handset manufacturer, you know, where they can just take the basic operating system, but then lower and, you know, put in all their own apps. And they probably keep all the data and all the demographics and all that. You know, all the data is, you know, super useful. I wonder whether Apple would give them the same terms. You know, I don't think Apple's going to open it up and say, here, it's free for anyone to use, and have at it willy nilly.
Probably not. Apple will probably charge them money for it too, whereas I think Android is free.
But like you say, the CarPlay is a good model. You know, maybe they could do it like with the CarPlay model. And I don't know what the terms are for licensing CarPlay to different manufacturers.
I mean, I understand Apple's reasoning for not doing this. This is not really what they normally do, right? They want to sell you a piece of hardware.
Right.
But it also shoots them in the foot because all these TVs are starting to build Android into the TVs, and with TVs getting smarter and smarter, and with them having the same capabilities as your Apple TV, as TVs get better, it kind of makes you think, well, why would I even need an Apple TV at this point? There's no point in spending $180 on an Apple TV if my TV has 90% of the apps that the Apple TV has built in. Anyway, just a thought. Just a thought. That's something that I've been thinking about a lot as I've been looking at TVs.
Are you going to get a TV then tomorrow? When the episode comes out.
I'm thinking about it, yeah. So one of the TVs I'm looking at is the, as I mentioned, the LG B7A, which is one of the most highly rated OLED TVs out there. And I went to a television store to look at TVs yesterday thinking that it was going to make my decision easier. Don't do that. It's actually the worst decision you could possibly make.
It just confuses it.
It just makes, because you're looking at all of them side by side, and then you see another TV that's better, but it's $1,000 more, and you're like, oh man, I don't really know what I want anymore. And, and now I'm thinking, maybe I'm just going to throw my hands up and just say, screw it. I'm just going to stick with my 1080p TV. Right? I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do anymore, but that is one of the purchases that I'm thinking about making, because this TV is normally like $2,700, and I've seen Black Friday deals for this B7A for, I just saw one today, for $2,100. That's how much they're being marked down.
That's a lot for a TV.
Whoa. It's a lot for the exactly. It's a 65-inch, though, but it's still a lot.
Well, you can get 65-inch 4K UHD TVs. I think there was some for, $400-$500.
Yeah, but that's like saying, why would you spend $50,000 on a car? You could buy a car for $5,000. You know, exactly. It's
my brother had, he went out and bought a TV, he had $500. He went into the store, he said, okay, I want a TV for $500. He bought the first one they showed him, took it home. He's super happy with it, and he never thought about it. And all that, I did the same as you. I spent weeks going down to the store looking at all the different TVs. Every time I go, I see the same guys, right? I'd recognize them. Oh, yeah, you were here a couple of nights ago,
Because they were looking at TVs too.
Yeah, they're doing exactly the same thing. And we agonized over it for weeks. And then when you buy it, you have all this buyer's remorse. Oh, no, right. Did I get the right one? You spent hours looking at all the reviews, poring over them, trying to validate your purchase. It's just not worth it. I envied my brother, for his ignorance. He was super happy with his TV.
Of course he's happy with it. He didn't care what he was getting going into it. He had $500. He's like, just sell me a TV. Those kind of people baffle me. I am not one of those people. I do like hours and hours and hours and hours of research. And
no, but you'll never be happy. Happy with it.
I think I will. I think ultimately I will be happy with whatever I buy, because when it's not against the wall with 50 other TVs and you can't see what's wrong with it, you're going to get used to it. And it will just become what you're used to, and you'll probably love it.
And here's another lesson as well. Like, I bought a nice TV, like a Sony one, like you. It had one of those Wii remotes, which I actually found annoying, because you had to sort of move it around, and the mouse would move around on the screen, the pointer. It was kind of fiddly. And I had it about 2 weeks, and then we got this new dog, right? It's super energetic, always jumping up and down, and it completely drives me batty. And he dropped this toy in my lap, and I was really bad-tempered, and I flung it across the room. And I was trying to fling it, like, the TV is right next to this doorway, the connects to our dining room. So you know what happened. It smashed right into the TV, right, of course, and I completely broke the bloody TV, throwing this dog toy. So then that was like, then my wife made me go get a $500 TV. So
that would be a major bummer. How long did you have it?
It wasn't very long. It was like a month or two.
Oh, no. You broke your TV after a month or two after all that?
I know. And it was a super nice one as well. A big Sony, 65-inch, I think.
Oh, man. Those were the expensive ones, too.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Like, I'm not so sure. Like, the menu systems, some of them can be really, really annoying. Like, one of the things I actually like about the Apple TV is the Siri remote, funny enough, and I find that it works really pretty well most of the time. And
you mean being able to speak into it?
Yeah, and, especially for skipping backwards and forwards, queuing stuff up, playing, and searching is really good. Entering any kind of, like, passwords and things, it's way better.
That's true, and you can use your iPhone to enter passwords and stuff. I just wish it integrated with Plex, and it doesn't. It just integrates with Apple's ecosystem of apps and content, and I don't even know if it does Netflix now. Maybe it does, but unfortunately, when you use search, it's just not integrated with most of the apps that are on your TV for whatever reason, which makes it a lot less useful. It makes it so much less useful that I don't even bother trying to use it anymore.
Which one?
When you're using Siri on the remotes, like if I say play me Prometheus, it will try to find Prometheus in the iTunes store, but it won't look on my Plex server and see if Prometheus is there for some reason, unbeknownst to me. I don't know why it doesn't, but so it makes it way less effective for me. I barely even try to use it anymore. Anyway, okay, let's talk about some of our favorite Black Friday deals. I was surprised when you guys told me you're not looking for anything.
Well, actually, there's one thing I'm looking for.
What's that?
The Google Home Mini.
Oh, why do you want one of those?
I just want to play around with it, but I don't want to,
they're like $30, right?
Yeah, they're going to be on sale for $30.
How much are they normally?
60.
Oh, that's a significant savings. That's something that you'll definitely be able to find for a great price.
Yeah. And it's cheap enough that it's like, I can just play, I want to buy one just to play with. And I heard some good things. I was reading about all the different capabilities. Like it looks like Google's doing some interesting stuff. All the attention is on Amazon and Alexa, But Google's trying to do some, you know, there's some fun games. Like, it's trying to play around. You know, it has a team dedicated especially to, like, fun stuff you can do with the Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, like, what animal am I game, a guessing game, that you can play with it. It'll give you clues to what animal it is. And you have to guess it. I don't know how fun that is. And that's actually another reason I was interested
in it. It will be really fun for about 10 minutes.
Well, I was reading somewhere, you know, like it recognizes all the different voices. So you can, it'll recognize your voice. It'll recognize your wife's voice. It'll recognize
now
your kids' voices.
Now that is handy. Interesting.
Yeah. And you can, you know, personalize what it does and also like sort of restrict stuff, you know. So like if the kids want to turn the heating on, you know, which they do all the time and crack the heating up to like 90 degrees and costs us $500 a month in our heating bills, you know, right. I can set it so that it'll cut them out. It'll restrict them. The kids
so
won't be able
only
to do
your
that.
Voice will be able to perform
right.
that command.
Yeah, exactly.
That's some next level shizzle right there. I mean, yeah. That's some stuff that you think, wow, how has Apple not figured out how to do that yet?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that's what I was interested in doing. So, and for $30, you know, it's like, it's a sort of a no-brainer. I can, it'll be interesting to sort of dip my toe into Google's AI smart assistant, you know, system for that.
Buster, talk to me about Apple deals. We were saying that there don't really seem to be a ton of great Apple deals so far this year.
Not a ton of great Apple deals. You can get, like, Apple doesn't really have many Black Friday deals at all. Like, sometimes they'll include, like, iTunes gift cards or, like, you know, small discounts. Mail has a lot of discounts. Like, on the iPad Pro, you can get them for, like, $70 cheaper. And they have some small discounts on MacBooks and iMacs. You can get like a good iMac deal from B&H. So like a lot of third-party realtor or stores have some Apple deals. I think Best Buy has some deals on some iPads and MacBooks as well, but nothing like crazy.
I know the iPads are going to be the hot thing this year. I've seen them on sale. They've been on sale on and off for like the last month and a half. And if you want to get a really great deal on an iPad, especially, wait for them to go on sale at Best Buy, which they will. And then don't buy a brand new one. Buy an open box model because the open box models are discounted even more and they come with a full warranty. So there's no reason not to buy one of the open box models. Let's see. Oh, the big one. I got to tell you guys about this. So I've talked about MoviePass before on the show. Okay. MoviePass is the Netflix of movie theaters. They're going to be out of business probably in 6 to 12 months. But it's a $10 a month service. Okay. But they're doing a deal right now where you can get the service for $7 a month and you have to pay them upfront. I think it's like $89 and there's an administration fee too, something strange like $6.55. But when you add it all up, it comes to about $6.95 a month and allows you to see one movie every 24 hours. Now, this isn't a service that's available in other countries. It's only in the US, unfortunately. But I've been using it for, I don't know, 2 months now. And I'm seeing all the movies, dog. I'm out there every night seeing a movie because there's no reason not to. In fact, I'm going by myself. I'm just going to see movies. Whenever I have a chance, I just hop into the movie theater and I go see a movie because once you have the movie pass card they send you, you just can buy movie tickets for free, essentially. It's insane. And I don't see how they're going to be in business in 6 to 12 months. And that's the only risk of doing this plan is if you pay them $90 up front and they're not in business after 6 months, well, then you lose your money, don't you? But if you've seen 5 or 6 movies in that time, then shoot. I mean, you're still coming out ahead because most movie theaters charge $12-$14 per movie. And if you live in a big city like San Francisco, what is it there, Leander? $14-$16 a month?
Yeah.
Or per movie?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's a super hot deal. And then I always want to plug slickdeals.com. It's the website that I always use to keep track of deals and especially Black Friday deals. And it's going to be going nuts on Black Friday. I mean, they've got like every Black Friday deal available because it's impossible. I mean, we could tell you about our favorite ones, but there's going to be so much stuff that is only going to be available for a very short amount of time. One of the best strategies is to use Slick Deals, and you can input keywords into slickdeals.com. And then when those devices that you have set keywords for show up, then it will ping you on your phone. They have an iPhone app and an iPad app that you can use, and it will ping your device and let you know as soon as it's ready, and you can hop in there and grab the deal. And I've gotten countless deals that way because it reminds you, A, that the deal is available, and B, it gives you a heads up so that you can go get the deal before anybody else. So there's been a lot of times where I've gotten the deal and the deal was sold out within minutes. So that's another great strategy to use if you're trying to get your hands on something. Slickdeals.com. For me, I'm trying to get my hands on some hard drives. I always need hard drives. I'm looking for some 8 to 10 terabytes.
Oh, you got to have 8 to 10?
Oh, dude, I'm going big.
I was
going
to say, there's like a good Seagate 4 terabyte hard drive deal.
Four?
Sorry.
What is this? What is this, 2002?
$94. 30%
That's actually
off.
A great price for a 4 terabyte hard drive. Anything between 90 and 100 is actually pretty good. But I already locked down one 10 terabyte hard drive for $120 via a Best Buy deal that they had going on for like only one day. Heard about it on Slick Deals, went in there, boom, grabbed it.
10 so, terabytes, it's insane.
Yeah, 10 terabytes. No, isn't that not insane? Yeah. 10 terabytes for a hard drive, but I've got a large movie collection. I think that's it. I think that's all we got. Unless you guys have any other deals you want to pimp.
Drone deals.
Oh, Lander, you had something.
Oh.
Well, hold on. Go on first, Buster.
I was just going to say, if you're looking for drones, like everybody has the DJI Spark for $400, which is like a...
That's surprising.
Yeah. Super like...
I mean, it must not be selling very well if they're selling it for that low of a cost.
Yeah, and I feel like that's like a great cost for like an entry-level drone. So I don't think you're going to get better than that, even if you go with like a cheaper, worse, bigger drone. So
and probably the best entry-level drone that you can get.
Yeah, I would check that out.
Okay. Lander, what do you got for us before we wrap it up?
So, you know, I'd like to talk about the Cult of Mac watch store and our giant Black Friday sale.
The hottest, most explosive, the blackest Friday sale.
Right.
That's what you should call it.
Definitely the biggest sale of the year. Like Amy, who runs the store, has been working with all of our vendors for months now, you know, trying to get up a bunch of different deals. And she's managed to negotiate like, 15 to 50% off a whole bunch of different watch bands and accessories. And we have like at least a good dozen different vendors who've got, you know, pretty big sales on all of their beautiful watch bands this Black Friday. Some of the people who are involved are Riley and Lowe, who do these really nice stretch bands out of metal.
Those are the super sexy ones, too.
They're super nice. They're really, really nice. Yep, they're 20% off. Casetify, which does really beautiful bands, 20% off. Oleksin Pranik, they're a company on the East Coast run by some people from Ukraine. They make beautiful leather stuff. Theirs is 15% off. Theirs is always super popular. Nyloon, 20% off. They make really nice fabric bands. And Juke, they make the company I talked about before a couple of times. Some of their bands are up to 50% off. And some of these are like, you know, fairly, they're not the cheapest bands. You know, some of the bands that they're going to be on sale were originally sort of $200, $250. Now, you know, 50% off of that, which is a really, really good deal. And they never, ever offer discounts like that. So I think there's some really, really good bargains to be had. And the sale goes on all weekend. It goes through to Cyber Monday. We'll be shutting it off Monday night or early Tuesday morning. And you want to go to store.cultofmac.com, store.cultofmac.com. And we have a special Black Friday page set up, which has all the deals. And I think there's some really good bargains to be had. So, yeah, please check it out.
Some of the best Apple Watches on the market,
Apple
Watch straps.
Exactly.
Some of the best Apple Watch straps on the market.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the other good point. You know, the other point about the store is that it's curated. You know, like, this is all stuff we checked out. We've reviewed everything that goes on the store, and it's stuff that we like, stuff we recommend. You know, it's not junk. You can go to Amazon, you can get cheaper bands. You can get some bands for like $7. There's a lot of cheap stuff out there. There's no shortage of cheap stuff. You know, cheap bands, cheap accessories, but you know they're cheap and they're not good. This is the stuff that we think is really good, and it's not always the cheapest, but it's the best stuff that I think we can find. And it's, you know, it's the one place, the only place I know of on the net where you can see all this stuff together. In one place. You can find this stuff on other places, but you can't find it all in one place. You know, it gives you a good overview of all these different accessories, all these different, you know, smaller companies are making, a lot of overseas companies. Some of it's pretty exotic, you know, some of it's really, you know, really hard to find, really rare. So I think it's a great place to peruse like all the different accessories that are available for the Apple Watch.
So, all right, store.cultamac.com for you to get one of the sexiest Apple Watch straps available. Go check it out. See what they have to offer. They have tons of stuff on the website. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Dude, we went long. Let's wrap it up. Oh, my gosh. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We hope that you guys all have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your friends and family. Hopefully, it's not too awkward and terribly painful. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Hey, if you need an escape If you need to get away from your family, come say hi to us on Twitter. You can talk to us about any of the stories that we mentioned here today. I'm at Airfun Busters, BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Gobble, gobble, y'all! Don't forget to kiss the cook. That's Tim Cook's favorite joke. And he says it, and everyone's like, right, Tim, but he thinks it's hilarious every single time. You're not looking to get some jetpacks or anything for your bike, Leander, that you can activate?
No, not jetpacks.
And,
no.
Go up to like 180 miles an hour.
Okay. I don't need them. I can overtake electric bikes on that thing anyway. The thing's rocket as it is.
Sure, the British Bullet. You're just screaming down the path at upwards of 16 miles an hour.
I can do nearly 30 on the flat now on that thing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's nuts. I wonder how fast can a normal bike go?
Well, you know...
What's a normal bike?
Yeah.
I mean, just a regular steel bicycle, 15 well, miles an hour?
Like, you know, around here, the tourists, they all cycle at, you know, less than 10 miles an hour.
You're going 30? You really are the British Bullet.
I can really push it. Yeah, if I'm really pushing it, like on the, down on the Embarcadero, where you can get a good long stretch.
Mm-hmm.
That's with the wind behind me. If I turn around, then it's like, you know, 7.
Okay. If there are hurricane force winds and they're blowing behind me, I could definitely get it up to 30. Otherwise, it's 7.
I was exaggerating. No, there was only a light wind, and I was pushing nearly 30. Like, I used to be able to do like 23, 24.
That's crazy.
On my old bike, and then this one, it's like getting up to like 28.
If you get going any faster than that, you're going to have to consider something drastic, like having that material from the space shuttle on your suit, you know, so it can like
right. deflect some heat shields.
Yeah, deflect the heat. That's the level your bicycle is at now.